Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, how are we doing this week?
Doing great. Got my first sunburn of the year out at the Elite 11 on Sunday. So officially feels like summer now, for sure.
That will do it. Please tell me you didn't go there without a hat on.
Oh, no. I'm now terrified of that, given the follicle status at the top of my head. I imagine that would be unbelievably painful, so I had a hat on the whole time. I did want to find a happy medium of trying to like get a little bit of sun up there to kind of leather it up. But I just never found a good avenue because my hands were full with my camera and all the things that I was working with. So hat stayed on the whole time. And that fashion update brought to you by T. Frank's Baldness. Cheers.
Just as a word of advice for someone with plenty of experience, T. Frank, yeah. No, you do not want to get burned up there. Always have the hat ready. All right, let's move. Hey, you gave the segue, though. You were at the Elite 11.
Yeah.
What went on? Tell us all about it.
Well, we would be here for a while. So if you want to get all the information, BlueWhiteIllustrated.com is the place to go. We'll be breaking it down over the next couple of days. Sean Fitz and I were there talking, looking and observing. And it's not just quarterbacks. They have an All-22 camp as well. So if you want to get that information, we had a running thread during the day over the Blue White Illustrated message board. You get that by 2 months for $1 using code PSU1. So you can get in and get all the information because, let me tell you, there is a lot that was going on. I was there at 8:30, and I didn't leave until 3:45. So it was a very long day. I'd say the most notable thing, we had this conversation, I think, last week about Brady O'Hara. Is he a tight end? Is he an offensive lineman? And the answer, as of yesterday, was sure. So he showed up, and he worked out with the offensive and defensive linemen. He went through the training with those players. So they did testing 40 times, things like that, and then some positional drills, but he didn't go through all of the positional drills with the offensive lineman, and then he caught passes with the tight ends. So, is he an offensive lineman? No. Is he a tight end? I don't know. And I think until that is decided, then kind of like we had the conversation with Mega Barnwell, and this is, I'm just going to repeat this, until Brady decides he's an offensive lineman, he's not an offensive lineman. That's a much harder thing to do than to just try and be your natural weight and be, I think he looks like he's 250 pounds. He's big. He's a strong looking kid. He had good testing numbers for not a tight end, because Andrew Olesh and Matt Henderson were both there as well. And he was very decidedly a different type of athlete from those guys. But overall, he's a good athlete with a big frame and you likely want him in your program. But again, where he fits, I don't think he knows just yet.
Well, let me ask you, T. Frank's thoughts on it. Uh-huh. First, eyeballing him, just eyeballing him, not seeing him go through any of the drills. You looked at the body. Did you look at him and say, hey, that's an offensive lineman? Or did you look at him and say, that's a tight end?
Well, it depends on where you go to school. If you go to school at Iowa, he's a tight end for sure. If you go to school at Penn State, no. That's not necessarily a guy that projects as a tight end for Penn State. From a classical sense of what they've done under James Franklin, he doesn't have the build. He doesn't have the weight distribution. It's great, by the way he's built, because he's got a lot of muscle and definition and strength and size in his lower half, which means he's got a lot of room to grow still, and he's 250 pounds. So, the conversation around him by fans and media and probably even internally about, being an offensive lineman, being a really good athlete to play at tackle, that's correct. Unprofessional, semi-professional, play a scout on television opinion, he's absolutely an offensive line prospect. But again, that's academic until there's any sort of decision made in his own mind. And so, again, I've been saying, it doesn't matter what I think, even though I think we all kind of see it, Brady has to see it. And that's kind of where the conversation stops. And I don't think that he based on his actions this weekend, I don't think that he's on the same page as everybody else. I think he still wants to give tight end a try. And I think you do have to respect that from a kid who's trying to make these decisions for himself about what he wants to be in and determining his own future. And I respect that. So, you know, yeah, that's kind of where things stand at this point.
I understand that. And you've got to have the kid want to do it. I think if I were on the coaching staff, I might just put like the details of old fashioned contract in front of him.
Yeah. Honestly,
just a subtle influence, perhaps.
If you look at tight ends in the NFL, they are one of the least highly paid positions across the league. Even guys like Travis Kelce don't make as much as receivers. Offensive linemen, especially left tackles, you're right, make a lot of money. So that's a big part of the conversation. But it's more fun to catch the football, Jim. It's more fun to run routes. It's just way more fun to be in, like, this is disrespectful to offensive linemen to be an athlete because all of them are athletes. The best offensive linemen are the most elite athletes among them because they do everything but bigger. But it's just there's something about running in the open field and catching a football that is intoxicating. And, I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
I don't know about you, but when it's time every 2 weeks to cash that check, though, T-Frank, that could be pretty intoxicating also.
Listen, my dad told me to be a lawyer. And here I am on YouTube. So, like, we don't always make the best decisions growing up because of what we're passionate about.
My father once told me a large checking account makes you much more attractive.
Yeah.
That was my dad's advice. All right. That's Brady O'Hara. What else? I'm sure there was a lot more going on at the Elite 11.
Yeah, so there was a good contingent of Penn State players there who we got to see for the first time. I got to see for the first time up close. And guys that we hadn't seen, I think, in a while. And one of the guys I'll start with is DJ McClary, linebacker out of New Jersey for the Nittany Lions. He is a good athlete, but he's pretty raw. Playing the linebacker position, the instincts, the ability to cover, just generally going through the positional drills, you could see like that he's going to be a guy that can play the position, but he's not necessarily, you wouldn't say he's going to step on the field as a freshman and make a contribution in the way that maybe a Tony Rojas or an Abdul Carter, an extreme example of a guy who changed the depth chart. He's a guy who's going to take a little bit of time, I think. But again, great frame, moves really well, built really well, and a guy who I think got injured last year, and at his school, he's doing so many different things. He's the quarterback. I think he was on kick and punt returns too. He's just their best athlete. So he's all over the field. He hasn't one of those guys that hasn't had a chance to specialize yet. Hasn't really gotten a chance to get into his position. So at the All-22 camp, it was a great trial by fire in that situation. But I'm bearing the lead here because the guy who I think stole the camp from the positional prospects was Andrew Olesh. He was there. He is different. You know, Matt Henderson, we went through the testing and we saw them compete against each other back to back. And Henderson held his own in terms of he, I think, had a better vertical than Olesh did. Olesh was faster, but they had similar explosive metrics. And then they ran routes. And there's just something about the way he snags the ball out of the air, the explosiveness. Literally his hand size, he's incredible catching the football away from his body. So there's a reason Penn State is after him at a high level. And there's a reason why when we talked about some of the Hayden Bradley and Lincoln Cure and the guys on our show on the BWI live show, when we talk about these guys and they're like, yeah, Andrew Olesh is in that company. You see him up close and it's obvious. Like, he was the most athletic player there from the, I'd say overall, really. And that's knowing Lyric Samuel was there, who also was impressive. Incredibly fast for a guy who's almost 6'4". So some good things for Penn State. And then you look at guys that they're after and Olesh, his abilities. I mean, it would be a huge get for Penn State.
When you talk about Olesh, has he set a decision date yet?
Very opaque with all of those conversations. So we will find out together. there is a tepid temperature in the room, I'd say. So just keep a perspective on that throughout the conversation and the recruiting process. So it's not a guy who's, from what we can tell, not a slam dunk Penn State commit. But they also are not giving good or bad information for the most part. So it's kind of up in the air at this point.
Well, this is why I always love when you get that first person live look at players. That gives you a different perspective, doesn't it, T. Frank?
I would say it fills in the details, you know, kind of you get 90%, 95% of the information if you have enough tape. But also it's maybe not even in person as much as it is comparing like to like. So Henderson is a 90 overall prospect and a guy at the tight end position who we're really impressed with. But then you put him next to Olesh and you go, okay, I still like Matt Henderson. I still think he's a guy that's going to play at Penn State. But if they got both of those guys, oh, wow. It's difference making in terms of what those guys can be together and what Olesh is and kind of the difference and the separating factors and some of the different parts of what their games are. And that's also to say that Henderson didn't go through as many routes with the quarterbacks at the Elite 11 as Olesh did. So we got a little bit less. I was observing him a little bit less than I saw Olesh, who I saw time and time again going through routes and was really impressive because he was working a lot with the top group I was following that had a couple of Penn State prospects and commits in the top group of quarterbacks during that Elite 11 in-state college at Memorial Field on Sunday.
Okay, we got a minute left in this segment. What else do you have from the Elite 11?
Trying to think in terms of there's some young guys that I thought were interesting, and I apologize, I don't have my roster in front of me. There were over 100 or so quarterbacks and players. There's some young players in the region that I thought were impressive, but mainly we were tracking those players that we were talking about today in terms of Penn State commits or top prospects. The quarterback groups, you know, we can get into it later or not. I got a chance to see Diabel up close. 2026 quarterback from Florida. So clean, you know, in terms of efficient, throws the ball well, everything looks effortless and sharp. Traits don't wow you, but he also doesn't lack them. So he's one of those guys that just at one point blends into the crowd and stands out at the same time.
All right, that's it for quarter number one. We've got a lot more to go. Stick with us.
We all understand the importance of physical health. F45 State College takes the guesswork out. Designed to burn fat and build lean muscle, focusing on strength training, mobility, core work, and agility. With over 50 branded workouts and thousands of exercises in our library, you would never do the same workout twice. Improve your day-to-day lifestyle and make the current activities you already do much easier and more efficient. Whether you're a weekend warrior on the pickleball courts or golf course, or maybe it's just finding it easier to move and enjoy playing with your kids, F45 is for you. Regardless of age or current physical condition, F45 tailors the workout to you. Current and former athletes, teenagers to retirees, and everyone in between. Their team of certified coaches is there to guide you every step of the way.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He is T. Frank Carr. I'm Jim Galante. We were talking Elite 11. Interestingly enough, we hear Elite 11. T. Frank, we always think quarterbacks. We were talking about other positions in quarter number one, which is just fine. But I do want to change the focus over to the quarterbacks. You hit on them just a little bit as we were finishing up quarter one. Let's go to it. Let's especially hit those quarterbacks that either are coming to Penn State or Penn State was hoping they would come to Happy Valley.
Yeah, so there are there were three quarterbacks primarily that I was following on Sunday. And if you're watching on the YouTube channel, it's also why we're now on the security cam footage of this show, because my camera died because I used all my batteries during the Elite 11 from the 12 hours I was there. So I apologize for the dip in quality here. But if you're listening on the radio on the Keystone Kickoff Show, you have no idea what I'm even talking about.
You look perfect on the radio, T. Frank.
Yes. The theater of the imagination has always been my friend. Okay, so the quarterbacks that we were following specifically, because they have ties to Penn State and because they are the top uncommitted players, would be Malik Washington is the top uncommitted quarterback that was at the camp, who, you know, if you want to get some information about that, again, I talked to him afterwards and got an update on where he stands with Penn State. The other two that were the main focus that I had, and you can see the highlights on the Blue Whale Illustrated YouTube channel and, of course, on our website, are Beckham Kritza, the Penn State quarterback commit, who is the player that committed during the season from Colorado via Miami Central, where he is right now. And then, of course, the top guy that Penn State wants in this class, committed to Missouri, Matt Zollers, came up from Springford High School to compete at the State College Elite 11 Regional. So those were the three guys mainly that I was following. Another quarterback that was there, Ryan Montgomery from Findlay, Ohio. He's a Brad Mandler quarterback who is committed to Georgia. His brother is in a tackle committed to Ohio State. And then there were a couple other guys who were really impressive, kind of under the radar prospects that are committed to maybe some smaller schools, but were really good. And then, of course, I mentioned in the last segment, Dia Bell is a 2026 quarterback who is very important to Penn State in terms of the next recruiting class. They're trying very hard to get the son of Rajah Bell to commit to the program. And he came up for the weekend from American Heritage High School in Florida. So it's a regional that extends all the way to Miami, North Carolina. Lots of quarterbacks came up because this is the last Elite 11 regional before the finals in California. So a lot of talent, not just on the skill positions coming out, but also especially, obviously, the quarterbacks. There was a deep group of guys in 25 and then 26.
Okay, let's talk about those guys that either committed to Penn State or Penn State is still after. You mentioned Matt Zollers. He's committed to Missouri, but it sounds like Penn State has not given up on him. They would still like to bring him in. Let's talk about those two players. Who looked better? What were their traits? Who's potentially moving on to the Elite 11 finals?
So we'll go with the facts here that you could see on the internet, and that is the top quarterbacks from the regional were Ryan Montgomery, who was the number – I don't know if it matters who was announced first. He was the first quarterback announced going to the Elite 11. There were two automatic bids up for grabs, and then other quarterbacks can qualify once they go back and review the film. And that's where, you know, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, we may – have new information that some of these guys in this group were invited that were not the top two, but Zollers was the other guy who was the top quarterback. That those two guys were the ones that were invited to the Elite 11. So for the first time in, I think, 2 years now, Penn State has not gotten a quarterback to the Elite 11 in California. So that's just an interesting wrinkle. Doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean that they can't get one of these guys or one of these guys that didn't go to the Elite 11. Doesn't mean that one of them who, you know, Kritza, who's committed, can't turn into, you know, a great quarterback. It's just, you know, this indication, this marker, some of the guys they were after in this class, committed elsewhere and are through recruiting. And now this process are kind of verified as these top quarterbacks, Penn State, not among the teams that has a guy at the Elite 11 this year.
Well, we know Montgomery headed to Georgia. That's an indicator right there that he's probably a pretty good quarterback. We know Matt Zollers, you know, the list of teams that were after him and how highly regarded he's been. But let's talk Beckham Kritza. Mm-hmm. Would you see from him, and where do you categorize him relative to those top guys?
So in terms of overall talent, he might have the most physical ability. So to in this conversation, it's not necessarily about talent. It's about polish and consistency. And that was just from my observations. That was probably the biggest differentiator is that Kritza, when he's on, it's beautiful. And like you see that on film too. There's nothing that we saw at the Elite 11 that you can't see on highlight film or some of their full game footage. Where Kritza, he is a good, He's not as athletic as these other guys, but he's a good scrambler. He throws well on the move. It's just his mechanics and his fundamentals are a little bit more inconsistent. And so that is maybe a percentage below these guys, which, you know, if we're talking about who could be invited later, maybe he's a guy when they go back and they watch the footage and they decide, okay, this is worthy of including in the Elite 11. Because, you know, this is generally how I feel, is that last year, Ethan Grunkmeyer was heads above everybody else in terms of his consistency, his accuracy, his precision, all of those things. I was surprised when he missed a throw, which is not normal for a quarterback. This time around, this group was much closer. So Zollers and Montgomery were the two guys that were invited, but Malik Washington was right behind these guys. He's a very impressive football player. And maybe right behind that was Kritza, who, like I said, when he does it right and when it's on, he's 6'5". He stood literally a head above everybody else. He's just very narrow, thin player at the moment. But when you get to how quick his release is, how strong his arm is, there's so much to work with there. And so you wouldn't say he didn't belong in that group. It was very competitive throughout the day.
All right, let's talk about Kritza and those inconsistencies, as you mentioned. Does it look like it's one of those fixable things that you say, aha, when the throws don't go where they're supposed to be, it's the footwork is an issue that he needs to clean up? Or is it just one of those, well, accuracy is one of those things that quarterbacks have it, they don't have it, and may never have it. I guess I'm asking how easily cleaned up would some of that be?
I've learned my lesson not to be overly specific about quarterback fundamentals because I'm not a quarterback guru. I have listened to those people. I did hear some feedback while we were on the field. And I don't, not to give you a non-answer, but I don't know, because it all comes down to the individual and whether or not they have the mental fortitude to work through their mistakes and to consistently apply the techniques that they need to fix this stuff. One thing I noticed about Kritza is he is very quick. His feet are quick. His release is quick. And sometimes it's a little too quick. So rushing through those things instead of taking the time and having the proper cadence in his mechanics is going to be something that's really important to him. So slowing some of these things down and being more consistent with, you know, just some of those little things of foot placement and making sure he gets his heel into the ground and transitioning properly and making his weight transfer. All those things are very small. So you could say they're easily correctable, but also they are an ingrained habit from a physical standpoint. And only so many people have the ability to intentionally change them and make real lasting progress in these areas. So that's the part I don't know. You know, trying to get to know him a little bit better, trying to understand him as a prospect, those things are a little bit foggy. But I do think he's got the baseline of talent from the mechanical standpoint. There's nothing so, you know, there's not anything he does that you go, oh, wow, that's a real problem. Because if there was, I don't know that Penn State wouldn't have accepted his commitment because he's so raw and the traits are there, but you wouldn't accept a guy who has raw traits and like a big flaw. So I think it's all close enough. It's just whether or not it's going to be something he can work with and over the next however long it is, into 16, 18 months until he gets to Penn State or whenever he decides he's going to enroll, those are the things he's going to need to work on.
Well, I always compare quarterbacks to pitchers. And when you're long, there's a lot of moving parts. So if things were easy to fix, they'd be done already. So we don't want to trivialize those.
He's a big kid, too, in terms of, you mentioned long. He's got long arms. He's got long legs. And that's the nice, that's the great thing. That's the special about him is that, you know, he does not have a big windup. So he is very compact in his delivery. Everything is tight, but it is kind of, like we said, it is a little bit too quick at times. And that's just my kind of casual observation of what I saw from him in person. But you like that, too. So that's that, you don't want to say like this is a negative, because that compact, efficient, lightning quick delivery, when it is smoothed out, now becomes a differentiating factor between him and the rest of these quarterbacks.
I like that he has the tools. let's see if he could clean it all up. You mentioned Malik Washington as another Penn State target, but it's also interesting, and this is just in general in recruiting, Penn State obviously would take two quarterbacks, but it's you have Matt Zollers over here who might be 1A, and Malik Washington who might be 1B. You have that sensitive, well, you're kind of trying to play the long game with these guys.
Yeah. So I spoke to Malik after the camp, and again, you can check all that stuff out at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. But I'll say this about what I saw from him on Sunday. There was a lot of really impressive guys. I think I was most impressed by him because he's the best combination of, I think, a fairly good quarterback prospect. Let's just talk about the quarterback ability here. He is a good thrower. He was, you know, on par accuracy-wise and consistency-wise with the guys that made it to the Elite 11. And he is a really good athlete. His testing numbers, he didn't win the overall testing metrics, but he had some of the best explosive and speed numbers at the camp. So the combination of skills there is really, really good.
All right, T. Frank, that's it for quarter number two. We've got your questions when we come back for quarter three.
We all understand the importance of physical health. F45 State College takes the guesswork out. Designed to burn fat and build lean muscle, focusing on strength training, mobility, core work, and agility. With over 50 branded workouts and thousands of exercises in our library, you would never do the same workout twice. Improve your day-to-day lifestyle and make the current activities you already do much easier and more efficient. Whether you're a weekend warrior on the pickleball courts or golf course, or maybe it's just finding it easier to move and enjoy playing with your kids, F45 is for you. Regardless of age or current physical condition, F45 tailors the workout to you. Current and former athletes, teenagers to retirees, and everyone in between. Their team of certified coaches is there to guide you every step of the way.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. And this segment we call Ask T. Frank. We've got your questions. If you want to send a question in to T. Frank, just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button, and away you go. All right, T. Frank, you ready for the questions?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, let's see. Oh, here's an interesting one. Let's start with Carl in Charlotte, who says, what went wrong with Mike Yurcich? He was so highly thought of when coming in, T. Frank.
So I don't know where to start in that journey, truthfully, because there's a lot of things over the course of time that I think revealed themselves that made it not a good fit. So I think the first thing is he is a really... It's always easy to, I guess, you know, I don't want to use inflammatory words, but trash the guy going out, right, who did not do the job you wanted. I think he's a good football mind. He makes good concepts. He puts together good plays. But if there's a relief picture, Carl, of what Mike Yurcich needed to be, and Andy Kolnicki is that relief, there are certain things about him that did not fit for Penn State in terms of being adaptable. I think Mike was a little rigid in what he wanted to do. He had a system that did not translate to Penn State's skill players. We talked about this, of being in the Big 12, of having Justin Fields at Ohio State and a lot of vertically inclined receivers that you can get open, that can get themselves open, and you just have to design the plays. And then you come to Penn State and you got to run two tight ends. In 2022, I wrote this of, I just couldn't understand the difference of what I was seeing versus what I had seen. And I made the comparison at the time of, do you take a lead guitarist and ask him to play rhythm? Because that's the difference of what you were asking him to do, of going from a vertical passing attack downfield to two tight ends running the football, being a ball control offense, essentially, and trying to generate explosive plays with non-perimeter athletes, meaning tight ends and running backs. And I guess in the end, I don't necessarily fault him as much as I fault the situation, because there are plays, I wrote about this all year, I showed you examples during T-Frank's film room, of plays that worked on the whiteboard and got guys open, but they just couldn't execute it because the passing protection wasn't good, and there were critical breakdowns here or there, or receivers didn't get open in critical situations. There were some limiting factors, too, last year in terms of... Now let's look at 23. 2022, they had a diverse run game that had layers of different concepts and different schemes. Formationally, they did some, you know, the backfield with two tight ends and a running back in the pistol. And then all of that kind of disappeared last year, and they went with more of a pure zone look. And they didn't have pin and pull. They didn't have any outside perimeter running to go with it because the tight ends struggled to get those critical blocks. We talked about that ad nauseum. So you're just limiting things, and you're getting the playbook smaller, and then suddenly you're left with no more room to run. And, you know, in the adapt or die, it doesn't matter. And no one cares about any of that stuff, but that is part of the narrative of we saw one thing at his previous stops. We saw another thing in 21, another thing in 22, and another thing in 23. And so I think, like, the situation, he was not built to overcome the personnel and the lack of explosive receivers. And we can put the blame on him. We can put the blame on the situation. We can put the blame on the infrastructure. But really, I don't have a good answer of what happened to Mike Yurcich, because I still, to this day, looking at you in the camera, and I know it's not popular, I think he's like a smart football guy who knows plays, and maybe a little bit like Sean Clifford, of like, you get him on the whiteboard and you're like, wow, this dude knows what he's talking about. This stuff is really good. And then the translation to the field, it gets all jumbled up.
And I think sometimes, T. Frank, and I've made this comparison before, for those of us out in the real world in private industry, sometimes you hire that guy, and the day you hire him, boy, you think you got a five-star, all-pro kind of person you're bringing in. Yeah. Then you just find it's not the right fit. You know, he's used to doing things the way he did at a previous job. He needs to adapt. It doesn't work with the other employees, as it seemed to be the case with Yurcich and the other coaches. It just didn't seem – it just was not a good fit. Wish him well wherever he ends up, but just not a good fit at Penn State. All right, let's see. Sam from Paoli says, is this year's roster an improvement over last year's?
No, but it's not a downgrade. So it's not an improvement because the offensive line is worse. There's no way around that when you lose your tackle, your center, and your tackle. And two of those guys were top 70 picks in the NFL draft. Caden Wallace kind of became the Sean Clifford of this next round of, by the end, we didn't fully appreciate how much progress he had made, and he had really turned the corner. So the offensive line, kind of the bedrock of all these things, it is not going to be as good. Whether or not it gets there eventually with Drew Shelton and Anthony Donko, I don't expect that, especially in the first month of the season. I would say Nick Dawkins, I am not somebody who's going to buy in blindly to the idea that he is going to be great. I think he can be a good center, but from a physical perspective, what I have seen from him on film is that there's a step back from Juice Scruggs and Hunter Norzad from a talent perspective. If he can execute the job, it does not matter. Center is one of those positions where maybe you're not the best athlete, but you can still do the job to a high degree with intelligence, technique, and veteranness, the kind of the just savvy vet stuff. But I want to see it. I need to see something before I go, okay, that is going to be solved. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I think that they can reload at defensive end. And at corner, I'm very encouraged about those players. But there is that unprovenness in the secondary at corner. And I know people have a sour taste in their mouth about Johnny Dixon and Kalen King, about how things ended in the last season. But there's a fickleness to corner where sometimes... I mean, Joey Porter Jr. struggled in 21 before he came out in 22 and was a essentially a first-round pick with a 32nd overall pick in the second round. So you've got a little bit of volatility there, but I think that they have the talent to also reload there. It just becomes at those, at that, those two very important positions, tackle and corner, how are those going to shape up throughout the season, and will they be ready in time for the most important games? So, Sam, I don't want to say it's better. I don't think it's better, but I think it can still, with the right pieces and the right coaching, get to the same level as last year, and I'll never take away the ability to be surprised and for it to exceed. Because again, if Drew Aller takes a step, the offense supports him better, then suddenly you've got a game-changing situation where the offense can match the defense. And I still want to leave room for that because I believe in Drew Aller, the quarterback, the mind. We just have to understand, he has to understand how to, again, implement that on the field. So there's some up in the airness, but to me, that means no, it is not the same.
And T. Frank, it's part of the college game where players graduate, players move on. You had this many NFL draft picks leaving the team.
Yeah.
The first instinct is it's not better. You don't put into the calculation, don't bake in how much better the underclassmen could become. Who's going to step up? But I also think the offense underachieved last year.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's a lot of opportunity. Even if you downgrade the offensive line, there's still an opportunity for the offense to be better.
You've got a redshirt freshman as the odds-on starter at right tackle. And you've got a guy who's a junior who has had some worrying play. So even if you are saying from a positive projection, those guys are going to get better, is that a baseline of we can operate in all situations or in most situations? And I just don't know that. I don't know. I can have the positive spin of improvement, and I'm not saying that they're not going to improve. What I'm saying is, are they going to be the level they need to be? Because football's a really bleeping hard game, especially when you're playing tackle, that against the best, they'll have a shot. And Penn State had a shot against the best last year. That game against Ohio State, throw out the final score, the defense kept them in the game all the way until the offense imploded. And I think that, is that the case this year? I don't know. I don't know that.
Well, to me, pointing out the offensive line, I don't think the offensive line can be better or even as good as it was a year ago. Not when you lose the players that they did. But again, like I said, the overall offense, I think, underachieved for the amount of talent they had last year. They might have less talent, but perform better this year as a unit.
Yep.
At least that's what I would like to see, T. Frank. All right, let's go to Tom in Binghamton, who says, moving to defensive end doesn't mean you can't use Abdul Carter in different ways. T. Frank, how would you best make use of Abdul Carter?
I would have kept him at linebacker, but
that's
me.
Okay.
It's not to say, so use him the same way, but use him as a, you know, how they had been using him. Rush the passer more, but his primary position being linebacker. Now, I understand, you know, the defense is changing, the tone of it is changing. But just from a depth perspective and from a consistency perspective, that's more of what I'm talking about, of trying to have variables that are consistent, and we know that Abdul is a very dangerous pass rusher when he is coming from the second level. So I'm trying to make it easier on him to get to the quarterback by doing that. And so we're getting to, it's my grandparents used to argue about how to get to the same exact result. They were saying the same thing, but it was like they would just at each other about how they were saying the exact same thing. And so we're in the same spot, like Abdul, pass rusher, hybrid Micah Parsons, great. But having an extra defensive end playing linebacker is super helpful. And so on rundowns and situations like that, you know, having him to throw at the line wherever you want, I thought was a useful tool to leverage the offense. It can still work, and I think he has to earn the right to rush the passer. And I don't know, like, he's got to work very hard to learn those skills to use his hands better and to rush against the best pass protectors on the offensive line each week. And so, you know, with a deep position and a lot of talented players, I would have kept him at a hybrid spot where you can, more easily deploy him everywhere, but you can still deploy him wherever you want. You're just, I think, a little more limited in how that works because he's not off the ball where he can go either way. He can drop and he can go into certain field zones, but I don't know that you can put him anywhere.
Very good, T. Frank. That's it for quarter number three. Stick around. We got another segment to go.
We all understand the importance of physical health. F45 State College takes the guesswork out. Designed to burn fat and build lean muscle, focusing on strength training, mobility, core work, and agility. With over 50 branded workouts and thousands of exercises in our library, you would never do the same workout twice. Improve your day-to-day lifestyle and make the current activities you already do much easier and more efficient. Whether you're a weekend warrior on the pickleball courts or golf course, or maybe it's just finding it easier to move and enjoy playing with your kids, F45 is for you. Regardless of age or current physical condition, F45 tailors the workout to you. Current and former athletes, teenagers to retirees, and everyone in between. Their team of certified coaches is there to guide you every step of the way.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, we've had a good show so far. We had a couple segments talking about your visit to the Elite 11. We took your questions and asked T. Frank. And now, T. Frank, I want to hit something a little bit different and something I do every year. It's one of my takes that the redshirt freshmen are the most forgotten people on the team. Yeah. Okay. They obviously didn't play a lot of games last season to burn their red shirt. They're also not the shiny new object like the true freshmen are. Mm-hmm. So we often forget about them. So I'm going to use this segment to not forget about them. And I have the list of names here. Before I start jumping around, because we just have one segment to do this, tell me about that class, the redshirt freshman. Are there any guys specifically that you're saying, I can't wait to see this guy play?
Oh, there's a bunch in this class, and I think we've mentioned a couple of them. You've as much as we're talking about Anthony Donko, he's a redshirt freshman. He didn't burn his redshirt last year, and same thing with Andrew Rapelier. I think those are the top two guys you can talk about in terms of will have a role. Maybe starters, may turn into the best offensive lineman on the team in terms of talent and upper end ability and the way that Donko has shattered the learning curve. I think he has the opportunity, if he just keeps doing what he's doing, to be the most athletic, consistent offensive lineman on the team by the time he's done, like we're progressing this year and where it matters. So those guys are going to be incredibly important this year as redshirt freshmen.
Well, I like that you brought up those guys, and I'm going to generalize a little bit by position. Tight end, there's Andrew Rapelier and Joey Schlaffer, who qualify as these redshirt freshmen. And as you mentioned, Rapelier has a chance to be a real good player this year. On the offensive line, you mentioned Anthony Donka, who we presume will be the starter at right tackle, but you still have Alex Birchmeyer, Javon Williams, and Chimney Ono, who are also redshirt freshmen. And I know we get critical because Donka probably has surpassed Birchmeyer and Javon Williams. Let's talk about those guys. You still have that high expectation for them as we did when they first came out of high school?
Oh, for sure. You know, especially Javon was a guy who we knew was going to take a while to transition because he had never learned to pass block. And that is ongoing. And he is still the same athlete he was before. I'm going to be interested to see how he fits into the offensive line as he develops. You expect him to be a tackle, but we always said this is an NFL guard. So with guys that are 6'7 on the roster, 6'8, 6'6, does he bump inside eventually? I don't see that right now, but I think his versatility, his athleticism, his explosiveness fits in this Andy Kolnicki offense very well. And if he's a part, if Andy Kolnicki stays long enough to see Javon Williams develop, I think Javon is still a guy that can be a difference-making offensive lineman. You get a little bit concerned about the way Birchmeyer's transition has gone, where he seems to be having a difficulty finding a home, and it doesn't seem like there's as much progress as you had hoped, given where he was expected to start. You adjust your expectations. Okay, and then there's still a little bit of struggle here. So how is he going to respond to that? How is he going to respond to moving around the offensive line? You know, going from a right tackle to a right guard to a left guard during the blue-white game. We'll see how he develops. And then the guy that I find the most fascinating, because we have the least information, but he also made the biggest transition, you know, big transformation, is Chim Diono, who was, I want to say, like 270 as an offensive lineman. Maybe he was a little bit bigger than that, but he looked very green as a senior in high school. He's 323 pounds now, and he kind of looks like a guard. This is a guy that we saw play tackle. But he is built a little bit like Caden Wallace in terms of that perfect tweener of big, powerful lower body. But he, again, he's from a technical standpoint, from a feel for the game standpoint of knowing how to use all the different tools, very raw. So they've got a lot of really upside high talent in this class that is going to take time to translate. But we've seen Phil Troutwein, the guys who can get it, he's able to give you the tools to get it. And so there's a strong group of offensive linemen here, not for 24, but maybe 25, 26. So they've got a really good baseline of young guys in this redshirt freshman class.
I think it's interesting, those positions, both tight end and offensive line, that's where they're already good, and there's more good players coming. Quick note, there is no redshirt freshman wide receiver, T-Frank. Yeah. The only freshman on last year's team, Carmelo Taylor, is gone, also along with the two transfer portal players who came in last year. At running back, London Montgomery and Cam Wallace would have been the two redshirt freshmen. Mm-hmm. London Montgomery has moved on. I think this is an example. We always go back to what James Franklin said about the one guy changing his body and the other guy not.
Yeah, and Cam Wallace is going to have an opportunity to have a role this year because he's a really good football player. I think he's a really well-rounded football player. He can catch the ball well. He can do all the things you want in this offense. And so in three-back situations, two-back situations where somebody needs a breather, I think he can be on the football field. He's proven that he is on track to do that. And then it's going to be whether or not Quentin Martin is a part of that conversation of how big of his role he has this year. So yeah, he's a guy that is absolutely going to be a factor on offense in some way. I think you got to understand that a factor on offense doesn't mean he's starting or he's a, you know, catching 10 touchdowns, but a guy that contributes is a guy that has a role. I think doesn't matter whether it's number one or number 13 in terms of snaps and all those things. Those are all important.
And what's interesting is I thought Cam Wallace showed more of that breaking tackles, like an every down kind of back. I thought Cam Wallace, he didn't maybe flash quite as much as Quentin Martin, but I thought he was very impressive in the spring game, T-Frank.
Yeah, I think he did some hard stuff. He lowered his head. He followed his blocks, all those things. Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to start at linebacker because I like these the two names that are there, Tamir Robinson and Kavion Keys. We've been hearing a lot of positive things about both of them, T-Frank.
Tamir is interesting because this is going to sound dumb, but these are the academic sort of nerdy football things to say that Tamir may have more upside than Tony Rojas in terms of he's 6'3", almost 6'4". He can walk around at 235 eventually. Like, that's kind of a natural body weight for that guy. So him turning the corner this spring and showing, I think, a little bit more of those instinctive understanding where he is on the football field, how to make plays like he did in high school, that's critical for Penn State, not only for this year for depth purposes, but to understand that you've got another guy who can step in this Tom Allen defense eventually and become a really good Mike linebacker and somebody who could be eventually a difference maker and the best athlete at Mike linebacker that they've had in a long time. If he doesn't play well eventually, you know, like if he's not a guy that I think he can play either of those positions. So his presence on the roster, his kind of progression this spring is incredibly important to Penn State, both in the short and long term, as they try to find the two deep at linebacker, going back to Abdul Carter. This is why I'm saying, like, it would have been nice if Abdul played linebacker so you could make these decisions of what's optimal instead of what do we need to do and who needs to step up. So you got Tamir, and then Kavion Keys, again, great frame, 6'2", really big kid, really wide set shoulders, he's going to be a really good linebacker eventually, but just one of those guys, again, that was going to take time to learn the position and kind of be what they needed to be. I think in terms of high-end potential, maybe he's a step below Keys or to Robinson and Rojas, but he is still within that conversation of an athlete that can play the linebacker position really well.
And I want to just keep reminding people, that's a redshirt freshman. He's got 4 years of eligibility here, so there is time. All right, let's go to safety, where we all know King Mack left. That's the guy everybody was high on. But what's remaining is Dakari Nelson and Labonte Payne.
So I also, you bring up King Mack, and I do think it's interesting. We're talking about these redshirt freshmen, and there is this consistent refrain of, take Caden Saunders, of, he didn't produce as a sophomore. Should we be concerned? King Mack isn't getting on the field as a starter as a sophomore, so he decides to transfer. So if you want to, like, there is a little bit of look in the mirror when it comes to the pressure put on these kids to immediately be stars. It's not just internal. It's not just about, like, it comes from everywhere. So with that in mind, Lamont Payne's going to be really important because, you know, that field safety, they need a guy there, I think, to kind of filter down into the other positions. If you've got Zaki Wheatley, who's going to be a field safety, but can also back up the strong safety position. Dakari Nelson doesn't seem like he's quite as advanced as where you want him to be, so he's going to take a little bit of time. Lamont Payne, I have always thought he's a very instinctive football player. I think he gets football, and all. I'm using all these hackneyed terms I hate, but I think he's got a good awareness of the game. He understands from a mental perspective, and he's transitioned to safety, 6 foot 185 with cornerback-like skills. That's been a successful formula for Penn State at that safety position. They need a fourth safety. I don't know where it's going to come from or if they're just going to transition to playing three linebackers again or a slot corner, but they do need some depth at safety. And, you know, I'm looking squarely at Lamont Payne as the guy who is going to fill in where King Mack left. And this is his first year at the position, so that's a little concerning. But I also think he can do it. I also think he's got the stuff to do it.
The interesting thing, just a side note on King Mack, he's not necessarily going to go start at Alabama either. So that's part of the equation. I'm not sure that he took into consideration. In the last minute, we have names I have on the defensive line or defensive ends, Joseph Mapoye and Mason Robinson, and as a tackle, Ty Blanding.
Ty Blanding looked good in the blue-white game, 282, but the 6 foot one, he's another one of those fire hydrant Penn State three techs that they've had some success with over the years. He looked like he's taken a step, and I was impressed with what he was able to do. There's no room at the end for him to play this year from a meaningful number of snaps standpoint, but I was encouraged at what the future holds for Penn State, that they've got a guy who's on the right track. Mapoye and Robinson, again, redshirt freshman at a position where you need to grow up. Mapoye looked much bigger than I expected. You know, like, he is a guy that I thought was going to be more in that Odafe Owe build, and he's pushing 260. So I'm curious what the future holds for him. Robinson, he's had some injuries during his time at Penn State. He's got to kind of get on the right path again of getting bigger and stronger to find out what he really is, because both those guys were kind of there during the blue-white game, and that's been our biggest look at them. But I didn't see a whole lot to give you any sort of analysis of what they are or aren't at this point.
All right, T. Frank, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
We all understand the importance of physical health. F45 State College takes the guesswork out. Designed to burn fat and build lean muscle, focusing on strength training, mobility, core work, and agility. With over 50 branded workouts and thousands of exercises in our library, you would never do the same workout twice. Improve your day-to-day lifestyle and make the current activities you already do much easier and more efficient. Whether you're a weekend warrior on the pickleball courts or golf course, or maybe it's just finding it easier to move and enjoy playing with your kids, F45 is for you. Regardless of age or current physical condition, F45 tailors the workout to you. Current and former athletes, teenagers to retirees, and everyone in between. Their team of certified coaches is there to guide you every step of the way.